Jesus didn't have a problem with people that was in the streets. He had a problem with religious people.
How can I help anybody when I'm not even, when I was not even able to help my own son?
I would never do that. I would never do that. And I became that in a matter of minutes when they took my pain pills away.
And I said, I'm not where I want to be, but thank God I'm not what I used to be.
Ugh. This is Faith in Your Recovery. I am Randy Davis. Welcome to the battle. Hey, we're excited to have you with us. Thanks for joining us here at Faith in Your Recovery.
Absolutely.
We appreciate your time and your willingness. Hope you'll contact a friend. Let them know about us. Subscribe. Follow up. Hey, we're live here, as you can obviously tell. So text us one of those questions you have or any kind of comment. That'll encourage us, and it'll help you if we can answer that question that you've got. Our guest today is Michael Gleam. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me again. Yeah. It's good to be back. So, yeah, we just mentioned it was January 10th, right? 2023 as well.
January 13th of 23. Yeah, so we're real close to that 2-year mark. That was actually episode number 63 for us. I wasn't able to be a part of it. There was a little thing going around called COVID.
Yeah, I recall.
So Eric stepped up to the plate, took care of things. But I appreciate the opportunity to meet you and get to speak to you. So thanks for coming back to us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me back. I greatly appreciate it. Very grateful to be here. Thank you.
And kind of reload from your past. Tell the folks a bit of your history, your story. It matters. It's important. But we want to get to that point where we can lead up to speaking about your new book and today's experiences in life. Because we know there's been a lot of changes and a lot of God stuff. So go ahead and start us off.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, where to begin, right? You know, for me, it's just to kind of sum things up. Addiction and alcoholism started young for me. It was really just undiagnosed mental health issues was pretty much what started things. Severe depression, like major depressive disorder, is what it would have been diagnosed. You know, generalized anxiety. You know, I had extreme social anxiety and things like that. And I found at my age, I found a solution in you know, in different substances and alcohol and things like that, just to get me outside of between my ears, outside of there. And I really, at that age, I honestly felt like it was so bad where I felt like I was allergic to being in my own skin, almost. Like, that's how bad I needed to find some kind of relief to get out of it.
How old were you at that time, Mike?
13 years old.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yep. So about then, and that's when I was introduced to some things, and you know, even the mental health issues. You know, like, I opened up about it to my mother, one of the, you know, she was the closest person to me, obviously, and you know, and obviously she didn't, unfortunately at the time, she didn't know how to kind of deal with that, and you know, some when I kind of expressed the thoughts I was having, how I was thinking about myself, thoughts I had, you know, things I was. Just the things I was thinking about and stuff like that. And, you know, within, it didn't take, wasn't much longer. And I got a knock on the door and the police were there and they escorted me to a psychiatric unit at that age and put me in a locked unit. And so from that point on, that was a turning point for me, at the point where I felt like, wow, if I, first of all, I felt that, like, first of all, I kind of felt that, you know, I'm a little crazy, you know, and second of all, I started thinking that, wow, if I open up to even the closest people to me, that I'm going to be punished, because that's kind of how I felt. And that's what I held on to for a very long time. And so every time I felt the way that I did and had the emotions I did and, you know, the negative self-talk and things like that, that's what I would try to do, is numb it. And I wasn't one of those, you know, kids growing up in high school that would go and party on the weekends and have fun and stuff. Like, it was never fun for me. Anytime I used substances or alcohol, it was never to have a good, you know, quote unquote, good time. I was going to where I had to go to get the things I needed to get to medicate myself. And then I would just play the role role and put up a facade as if that's I was there for the same reason that you are, but that's not really the, you know, the case. And that went on for a very long time, for, you know, all my teen years. And you know, then it led down to a really dark path after that. I was selling drugs and, you know, doing just living a wrong lifestyle, and ended up putting me, after having had a couple children, had some bad relationships, ended up on the streets, homeless on the streets, lost everything, you know, multiple times, but then finally ended up on the streets for a very long time, for 7 years straight, and homeless in Kensington, Philadelphia, which is the biggest open drug market there is in the entire country, hands down, if not the world. You know, I spent quite some time out there, 7 years straight, and you know, I you know, spent just as much time in jails and institutions and rehabs and all kinds of places. I can't count how many times I've been hospitalized, you know, as a direct result of drugs and alcohol. And, you know, it finally came to a turning point for me in 2014, you know, just over 10 years ago. I woke up as John Doe in the ICU room of a Philly hospital. And waking up after having brain surgery, and I had a traumatic brain injury, and they had to actually remove a sliver of the left side of my brain. They had to pick pieces of my skull out of the left side of my brain and saw the left side off, remove it, and replace it with titanium. So how it happened is I was, you know, I spent, I know I'm having some issues here with this microphone. Hopefully that's a little bit better. Is that any better? Okay. It's being a little temperamental here. How it happened, you know, it's just that I have to take some accountability for it. I put myself in these situations, the lifestyle that I chose to live. And looking back, I had so many outs and I just never took them. You know, God gave me so many opportunities to follow a better path and kind of get out of that way of life. And, you know, I never took them. Always, it was just the what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And ultimately it led to that. And what it was, you know, I ended up seeing somebody and there was, you know, an argument over some money, a very small amount of money. And it got physical. I thought I had the upper hand. I start walking away and the guy went back in his house and came back out from behind me and hit me in the side of the head with a hammer and tried to take my life. And so that's when I woke up as John Doe in the ICU. I didn't know my name, how I got there. I didn't remember anything at all. And, you know, when I talked about how I kind of was raised a little bit about it. I did grow up in what I'll call like kind of a religious household. We went to church on Sunday. You know, to me, it was religion then. I knew nothing about spirituality and, or a personal relationship with God or anything. I believe there was a God, but that was about the extent of it.
That's all that mattered.
Yeah. You know, and it's crazy enough because I was forced to go most of the time, didn't want to go, you know, and, wasn't paying attention, anything like that. And I woke up in that hospital room. I didn't know my name, how I got there, anything. The only thing I could remember was scripture. It was the only thing that I could actually remember. And it was enough then that planted the seed to where I was stripped everything from me. And the material stuff I've lost time and time and time and time again, you know, and got it back rather simply. Like, and this time I felt like this is really the final straw here. And I feel like God had to remove the ability to allow this to happen to me, to really humble me this time and take the ability to be a human being, to be able to walk, talk, write, because that's what I had to do. I had to lose those things in order to gain them back and do them completely differently. And that's what I decided to do. That was my turning point. And I couldn't speak to the nurses. I couldn't communicate at all or anything. And the verses that I remembered, it's not that I would like remember them in my mind. They were being read to me. So almost like a third person. So not my own voice either. Someone was reading scripture to me. And the biggest verse, it was like on loop, was forgive them for they know not what they do. Forgive them for they know not what they do. And it made no sense to me at the time. I'm like, why do I keep hearing this? It was driving me nuts. And finally, when I was coherent enough, they kind of came and told me why I was in that hospital bed and what had happened. And someone tried to take my life. And then it all made sense. It clicked that it was forgiveness. forgiveness is what it was for me. And that's where it started. It was a big revelation for me, a spiritual awakening for sure in that hospital bed. And I held on to that line of communication. It was the only one I had. I couldn't speak to anyone else. And I truly felt like that day that I was in direct contact with my maker. I was in direct contact with God in that hospital bed. And that's what I held on to. And I held on to the faith and turned everything around. It took me a year pretty extreme, physical rehab, vocational rehab, speech therapy to be able to kind of overcome some things and be able to do things again, just be a human again. I was finally able to do so, a year later, and all those things that I lost, that I turned around and did them completely differently, you know.
How long were you in the hospital before you became someone other than John Doe to the people around you?
So it was there. So I was there for quite some time. I was there for a couple months. And then they got me down finally to out of the intensive care unit to a regular floor. However, they discharged me with zero aftercare plans, no follow up with neurologists, no follow up with any other doctors. It was just kind of like, it was not. Yeah, not the best, not the best treatment looking back. It was enough. I had what I needed, and thankfully for me, thank God that there was somebody who actually allowed me to move into their home and start my recovery process.
Were you still John Doe at that time?
At that time, I finally, remembered my name, remembered some things. Some things started coming back pretty slowly, and it took a long time for most of it to come back. But the minimal, the smaller things, not smaller things is a big deal. Knowing my name, obviously, but like those kind of things, who I was, came back and some different thoughts. But as far as like my history and, memories, it took a long time for those kind of things to kind of come back.
The incidentals.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, you go through that time, they move you out of intensive care, they get you into what called a regular room at that point, and then you get your release, but there's no follow-up of any type suggested or ordered or planned.
Yeah, nothing. And, gratefully, thank God that there was a person from a fellowship allowed me to move into their home, a complete stranger, a man that I didn't even know. He didn't know me. He just knew my situation and allowed me to, he had an extra room. He lived alone and allowed me to kind of stay there in my early stages. And I call like that first year of my of that part of my life more of my discovery than my recovery, because that's really what it was. It was rediscovering, who I was and what brought me to where I am, and just everything that had to come back, and the ability to be able to walk again and talk and write and do these things. And all the doctors said I wouldn't be able to do these things ever again. They told me the odds were completely against me. And, 50% of people die within 5 years after that injury. And a majority of the remaining people that don't within 5 years or so, they decline severely in mental capacity. And I bust my butt in therapy, because this time I actually truly wanted it. I felt that there was a calling, and this time there was a reason, because I've attempted suicide multiple times. I've overdosed multiple times. There were multiple times I should not be here. I should not have made it. But someone was always there. Someone found me. Someone, I was brought back. And I was always mad. I woke up and I was angry at the fact that I felt like such a failure that I can't even succeed at taking my own life. And that's how bad it got. This time was just, it was different. It was different. And that meeting, I'd say, that I had with God, that encounter in that hospital room, like I said, it changed everything, and forgiveness. And with that came accountability of really me putting myself there and realizing that, even the person that tried to hurt me, that person's sick also. And I can't expect to live a certain lifestyle and, do things and expect things not to happen to me, right? And be immune to that. So, I have to kind of take that with what it comes with the territory, right?
Sure.
So,
okay. What was it then that kept you on that positive path? you know, that kept you on that road home? We'll get into your book here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But what is it? Was it, you know, the building of your faith or the creating of your faith? And you knew that's what got you to the point where you were. Mm-hmm. And if you were going to move on, it was going to have to be basically that same highway.
Yeah, yeah. And it was most of that. It was, you know, my reconnection of faith and then understanding the difference between that, just that there is a God, and that also, you know, outside of that, that I can actually have a personal relationship with this God, and I can actually, you know, speak to this God, and you know, and that it changed everything, having an actual relationship, and changing, be able to see it from what religion is, right, to actual spirituality, and how it involves myself, my own relationship. And that's what kept me, that's what kept me going, because I wanted to quit so many times, especially in that first year of going through the therapies and stuff. I wanted to quit and give up. I wanted to give in. I wanted to end my life some of the times, even during that time. There was just that mustard seed. There was that 1% of faith that I kind of held on to. And also, I will be honest with you, you know, all the doctors telling me that I won't be able to do this, I can't do that, you know, it's, you won't be able to do this again. And I kind of use that as motivation, and to kind of prove them wrong, because I started making some progress and they said that I wouldn't. And I said, okay, all right, well, they said that, but, you know, and that's the thing about statistics, is it's numbers based off other people's experiences. It doesn't have to be mine. It doesn't have to be mine. And that's how I thought of it. And I said, I'm going to beat this. Like I'm actually going to make it. Not only am I going to get better, but I'm going to be better. And I think that was a big part of how God allowed me to heal the way that I did and really overcome these things. Because now, you know, I can talk about how, you know, I lost the ability to be able to write. And here I am. I was able to publish a book, right, and be a published author. You know, I was unable to walk. And today I'm literally walking out my dreams, you know. You know, the ability to speak, I wouldn't be able to speak properly again. And now I speak professionally on a professional level. So, but I do it all to glorify God. I do it all to glorify God now. So it was a complete 180, you know, as far as how life was and how life is now. And it was a brutal, brutal, transformation though, for sure. It was not easy by any stretch of the imagination, for sure. But it was worth every second.
Is it today? Is it easy today?
You know what? I don't like to use the word easy at all. You know, I manageable, right? Like I'll use manageable more often, but I don't really like to call anything necessarily easy. Anything that lasts doesn't come easy. Anything that's easy doesn't last. So I don't, if it is an easy route or something, then I'm probably going the wrong way. You know, if I'm being challenged, if I'm, you know, there are obstacles and roadblocks and things in my way, then usually I'm on the right path. Because, you know, if God is calling me in one direction to go somewhere and I start doing that and walking in my calling, there's always, always so much added, you know, stress and so much added conflict in my life in different areas and attacks in different ways, in sure. spiritual ways, and people closest to me are even being used. And like it's, and I know then that I'm on the right path, you know, and it's just being self-aware enough, you know, spiritually, that's what it is. Because just as much as God wants me to walk in my calling and what his will for my life is, there is an opposition to that too, that wants it as well.
Right? Just that wants it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Just as strong.
Yeah.
What was one of the first moments you recognized and realized, I am on a journey toward who I want to be and who God created me to be?
That's a really good question. You know, out of all the questions, that's not one that's asked that I haven't really been asked very much, but I would say probably it took quite a while, but I would say by that first year, going into my second year of, you know, after the injury and being, you know, clean and sober. And then because like that second year, I started to be able to get into more of a recovery process rather than the discovery part. So I kind of got what I needed there. And then I started being able to work on a better way of life and bettering myself. And once I started to see that and that change was possible and change was happening, and internally I was completely different. My mindset, my perspective on things, the way I saw things, you know, that's when I think things started like really changing. And then over the years, it just kind of evolved as well and changed in the different areas. And then, you know, and it got stronger and stronger and stronger, where it almost became an obsession of that's what I'm here to do, right? Is just, you know, try to be my most authentic self, you know, and do the whatever it is that I'm called to do, do it at the best of my capability, and glorify God in the process and give him the glory for it. You know, I get zero credit for being able to overcome the things that the doctors told me I wouldn't be able to overcome. Without him, there's no possible way I'd overcome it. There's no possible way.
You're obviously a miracle. I mean, whether we look at numbers or we just look at physical condition or anything else, God's made you a miracle. That's all there is to it. Now, how do I pay him back?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I don't mean penny for penny. I'm not that kind of thing. But I mean, how do I show my appreciation and all? And you're doing that. And one of those ways is certainly with the book, The Long Road Home. Tell us, obviously, we know how the book came about, but tell me how it got written. What inspired you to make it a book? How were you able to do that? Help us with that, please.
Yeah, so that's kind of a loaded question, because it was like a pipe dream for me. I just writing a book at one point, like I wanted to do it, but I was like, that's something I'd love to do. It's just never going to happen though. And then finally, there came a time when I was probably about 4 years into my recovery or so, going to like that fifth year is when I started to more so like recover out loud and start speaking more. And then seeing that, you know, my message did have an impact. It impacted people. It helped people. It inspired people. It motivated people. It helped people. So, I realized that, you know, I think I need to do that some more. And then along with that was the thought of, you know, I should write a book. I should write a book, you know, about it, about my experiences. And so I actually did in 2022. It was almost a different version of the book that you see that's published now through a publishing company, where I attempted to self-publish a book. And you know, and it was just it was more so in the beginning to, first of all, prove to myself that I could do it. But also I wanted to be able to, you know, put the story out there for the right people to get their hands on it, to read it and hopefully be inspired in some kind of way. And also just show them the absolute grace and mercy of Jesus Christ. And the hard part obviously was formulating how to do it, the how to put it together. And I you know, I came across some people back at that time that kind of knew that at that space and how to do things, and kind of gave me a little bit of insight on, you know, how to do that. And, you know, so I took that information and I kind of, what I did was just kind of write down my entire story as if I would share it at a group or a meeting or wherever it was. And from there I kind of dissected it. So I pulled it out into chapters and then I went back into each chapter and just went in much, much more detail. And then the goal for me was to paint a picture with those words. And I will tell you this, that it was a challenging, difficult time doing that. Not in the sense of, you know, you know, writing the actual book, but the emotions that came with it. Because I purposely tried to relive all these experiences as I was writing them back out. And so it was bringing back a lot of emotion. It was bringing back a lot of memories. Yeah. And I'm already diagnosed PTSD. So, and I'm purposely bringing these things back up. So I will tell you, you know, after writing it, I was in a pretty deep, dark depression for quite a while after writing it, because I was putting myself back in the situation, because I really wanted it to be pretty vivid. I wanted it to be pretty clear and raw and real. And I didn't want to hold back on it at all. And I feel like I did a pretty good job at that. So, you know, the goal was to make it kind of be like, so if I'm explaining a story, a situation, that you're right there with me and you're experiencing it. So, and it's full of ups and downs. And, you know, what I shared with you is just that the tipping point of where things changed. You know, there's 20 years of bad, battling the addiction and mental health challenges and suicide attempts and just so many just crazy, crazy things that have happened in life, you know, in there. And it's just, it's full of it, you know, and coming out on the other side, you know, it's a true underdog story, honestly, you know, and I'm certainly proud.
The Long Road Home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Find the word home to us. Per this book, okay, per your intention and your understanding.
Yeah, so I'll always say to people, you know, they ask me, I share my story, or they ask me questions or this or that, and I'll be like, you know, yeah, and or they'll see where I'm at now and having heard what I've been through, and I'll say, you know, it's been a long road. It was my go-to answer. It's been a long road. It's been a long road. And, you know, it kind of stuck with me. And then I just kind of, I was, you know, trying to think of some different names and stuff, and that was there. And then, you know, ultimately though, at the end of the day is that I'm saved and I'm promised a home. I went from being homeless to being a homeowner now. Right. And I have a home and I have a bedroom for all my children. And I have 6 children altogether, and a fiance, and, you know, relationships with my mother and my father and all the relationships I destroyed over the years. You know, I've earned all these back, but, so it's not in that kind of sense where now I have a home from being homeless, but kind of, but more so I've been promised a home. And I found that in the relationship and being saved through Jesus Christ. And so now it's just the long road home. So now that's even not what it was. It's what it is now. Even it's the long road home. So I'm still trudging that road home, because ultimately the destiny, the, you know, there is no finish line, but when it comes on my time to expire from this planet, I'm going home, you know? So this whole journey moving forward from what it was going through it and then going through everything, even now moving forward, it's just a consistent long road home. That's what my life is consists of right now, is how I see it. It's just one big long road home.
So what makes this book, your testimony, obviously, what makes it unique from books of the same genre, the same nature? I understand your journey's different than anybody else's. No two are alike. We get that. But what makes this special in that respect?
You know, I think that's a great question. I think, you know, for me, when I was writing it, I tried not to make it so much about just the story, right? Just what my story is. You know, this was me. This is how it started. This is what I went through. And here's what I'm doing now. I really tried to make it so it's not just for an individual who it might be suffering with addiction or mental health challenges, or people that are in recovery, but also for loved ones, or for people who are, you know, sober curious, right? Or for, you know, maybe the youth that are kind of questioning if maybe they're on that slippery slope themselves and aren't too sure. So I tried to make it so I add a lot of educational pieces in there, you know, factual based information, you know, from, you know, about addiction and things like that. So it's not just a story, you know, and just, you know, a compilation of things that have happened and overcoming those things. It's more so, you know, it can be inspirational, it can be educational, it can be motivational. And so it's multifaceted. There's layers to it, I think. I think that's what makes it a little bit different.
Do you see another book after this?
I do for sure.
You don't have to give us, you know, sell us on the details.
Yeah.
A little teaser.
Yeah, no, I do. You know, and originally it was going to be a part one, and there would be a part two to it. But I kind of stepped away from that. But I am leaning towards. So there's two projects I have in mind, and I'll let you know that one is being able to overcome addiction through faith. As a basic concept, I'll tell you there is.
Let me ask you a question. Do you believe we can overcome addiction outside of faith?
That's a good question. And I think there's going to be people that won't like my answer, probably. And I'm okay with that.
I didn't ask them.
In my experience, right, and that's all I can speak from, in my experience, and I have tried time and time and time again, and I had so many failed attempts and so many things in my life. And at the end of the day, that was the one thing that stuck, that worked. That's it. From my standpoint, from where I stand today, without faith, there is no chance for me. There would have been no chance for me.
Totally fair answer.
But that's what I can certainly say for myself, that without God, that it would have been a flat line. The show wouldn't be on today. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But then also to answer your question about that other book too, that the other concept of my book is more so, I really would like to. So I've worked in treatment for a long time. I worked in treatment for, you know, 8 or 9 years or so at different capacities, different roles, different levels and stuff, and treatment centers and stuff, inpatient, outpatient, whichever. It's just a lot. There's a lot of cookie cutter models of how you approach it and the different curriculum that's used and stuff. And I'm a really big fan of kind of stepping outside of that and stepping outside the box and really kind of, treat an individual as a whole, not just their illness or addiction or whatever it is. We're much more than that. We have much more in our life, much more purpose in our life. And that being a big part of it too, is knowing what your purpose is and that you were put here on purpose and for a purpose, and to be purpose driven and implementing different things like that. It's not everything I think has to be addiction recovery. You know, I think if we can get well balanced in a lot of different areas of our life, you know, as a byproduct, this recovery thing becomes a little bit more manageable. So I think it's treating someone as a whole, as an individual, not just you have this disorder, let's treat that. There's much more to it, I think. You know, I think for spirituality is the rock of it, is the foundation of it, is where it should start. And if you say that addiction is a brain disorder, well, then why aren't we treating the brain first? Why aren't we starting there? Right. If it's a brain disorder, why aren't we digging a little bit deeper on that aspect in some areas? So, you know, some people do it well, some people maybe they don't. You know, it's not me to judge it at all. But I'd like to put something together, my own curriculum for centers themselves to roll out as a curriculum for them to use more so for like an inpatient model.
Man, I'll tell you what, we're tied on the same ideas there. That cookie cutter illusion that you made, that is the way I see so much. And I recognize and realize there are so many different ways to recovery.
So many.
We're still taking many of the same steps.
Yeah.
And that until we, I think you used the term, till we get out of that box, until we get away from that habit and that style of thinking, we're not going to broaden our own horizon that's going to help even others find recovery.
Agreed.
With your permission, we're getting ready to wrap this up. We've got a few more minutes here, but I'd like to go into another episode, and it won't be so much about the book.
Sure.
Questions about recovery that I want you to understand, as well as our listeners, I've said shamelessly over and over, I don't come from a background of addiction. I come from doing 125 plus funerals for those who died. Mental health related, meaning suicide, generally speaking, or OD, you know, death. Listening to the families, and struggling with them, getting the call when their son or daughter was taken to jail. And that's where my experiences have come from. I've lost family members and loved ones to drugs. I can't say I've had the experience, but I can say more than once I've been told, you get it. I believe I do. I'm not saying I can understand it the same way you do, but I have my understanding.
And absolutely.
It's individuals just like you who have taught that to me. So those are the kind of questions I want to ask that come from outside the box. And it's kind of a beneath the wound thing.
We talk for sure.
Wound, we talk about the disease. We talk about the illness. What's that underlying infection that's there that we, you know, maybe fail to mention or to bring up? Is there anything else you'd like to say about subject or your book before we move into that next episode here, Mike?
Definitely. And I absolutely, I look forward to that. That would be amazing. I would love to do that. And you know, just the book's available anywhere you'd get your, you know, books, Barnes and Nobles, Amazon, anywhere online. The ebook's available. They're doing the audiobook now, which will, should be out within the next 30 days or so. So that'll be available. But so I just recently also launched. So I have a business called Next Level Movement. Next Level Movement LLC. So I do coaching. I do self-development workshops and treatment centers and things like that. And I get to travel and speak at different treatment centers and stuff across the country. And so I just also started a school community. So I'd like to put that out there for anybody who is finding themselves in a situation where they need some more community and support. And things like that to join the school community. So it's school, S-K-O-O-L, .com/Next Level Academy. And in there, I'm doing courses. You know, I have one that's Breaking Strongholds, you know, a 12-week journey to walk in faith and freedom. So things like that, that you can actually work on. And there's going to be just a great community of people to uplift one another, encourage one another, and kind of, you know, build a family in there. And obviously there's coaching as well. There's live weekly coaching sessions that I do there. So everybody's welcome to join for free. And what I'm doing when, as I rolled that out, is the first 100 people that come into the community will also get a free one-on-one coaching discovery call from myself to see how I could possibly benefit their situation, whatever it may be. If you are looking to get into recovery, you know, and what the next steps are, or if you are and you feel like you're lacking in some sort of area, or especially if it comes to the spiritual aspect, you know, if, you know, you want to deepen your faith and just deepen that connection with God, you know, all of that is available there. It's all encompassing there. It's a faith-based approach to recovery, and that's what it's for. And if that's your thing, if that's kind of what you like, then please join that community. It's Next Level Academy on school.com, and more than welcome to join for free. And I'd love to see a big, large community of people there just, you know, giving God the glory and just overcoming things. And I have some people there that I coach on a regular basis, and they're doing amazing. And, you know, the cornerstone of everything that's been happening, I'd say, even in their lives, is God, is the cornerstone. He's working in their lives. They're living, they're walking in the Spirit. And it is amazing and such a fulfilling feeling to be able to witness some of these transformations. And it's absolutely incredible. But it takes the first step to do it. So, you know, join, you know, judgment-free zone. You're more than welcome to join. I'd love to see you guys there. So go to school.com/Next Level Academy, and I'll see you guys in there. And you can reach out to me also.
A website that covers all of what you have to offer. Go ahead and give the folks that website.
Yeah, sure. So you can also go to nextlevelmovement.org. That's my main website, nextlevel.org, and you'll be able to see some things there. And my contact information is there as well. You can email me at info@nextlevelmovement.org, and you'll see the different things that I offer, the keynote speeches, speaking, event speeches, you know, self-development workshops that we do within all kind of areas, really, whether it be high schools, whether it be, you know, rehabs, treatment centers, things like that across the country. It can be anywhere. I'll travel anywhere. You know,
where are you located?
I'm actually from Delaware County, Delco, and Philadelphia area, southeastern PA, and bought a home in Delaware State about three and a half years ago or so. So I'll travel anywhere though, you know, to help other people, and that's what I'm here to do. So, you know, I come for a speech, do a workshop with some people, and, yeah, and coaching, and I do the life coaching, recovery coaching, and it's pretty faith-based too. So, you know, anybody needing any kind of assistance in that area, that's, certainly, what I absolutely love to do.
I am also from Delaware County, but it's in the state of Indiana, eastern Indiana. So we've got that in common. Yeah. What a great offer you've just made to our listeners. And I hope they'll take advantage of it. We'll post all of that information to make sure they're able to get that. They can contact us at... you know, at our office, our website's ABLBH, the initials for a better life, BriannasHope.org. And we can hook you up and get you together with Mike and make things happen. I'm sitting here almost laughing to myself, not in any mockery way, but in the way you've said over and over, you weren't supposed to be able to not just to do any of this, but even fathom it.
Yeah.
Here you are. We see what God does, what God can do, and He can use each one of us the same way.
Amen.
Maybe not as dramatically, but it took a number of people rowing the boat to get it across the water. Okay.
There's a role for everyone. Amen.
Yeah. So, find your role and play it. Thank you. So let's just move on from here to this next segment, okay?
Sure.
And these are questions I've been working on for some time, as we have said. After the first of the year, we want to move from faith in your recovery to kind of a piece underneath that, okay? And that is going to be called Beneath the Wound. We've done over 160 episodes now. We're 3 years in this, and we just want to change some of that, but we're not going to lose our identity of the idea of being about all things recovery, all things addiction. We will stay with that. But where I'd like to begin here, where do you believe the addiction community is lacking the support from those outside the addiction community that they need to help them take the next step? Is that, you understand that okay?
Yeah. And I think it's tough. It's tough to answer because it's kind of, you know, each state's different, each city's different, the way that they treat it, the resources. You know, I can speak for, say, like Philadelphia, right, where we're, you know, there was a lot of support for harm reduction and things like that, and we've got a new mayor, and now they're against harm reduction and completely stripped everybody away from everything that they do there, and literally closed businesses down because of it. And you know, even with the whole harm reduction thing, there's a fine line there between enabling and harm reduction, you know, in my opinion. But so it's hard to kind of pinpoint, I'd say, but support, understanding, and resources. Ultimately, at the end of the day, there's got to be resources. You know, imprisonment does not work, right? Like, you know, it does actually work for some people. You know, they do actually get clean and sober from going to jail and don't use again. But, you know, and actually to get in front of the problem is to address the youth more, is talk more about mental health challenges and struggles more openly, and talk about addiction openly in the younger years throughout high school, right? Even bring up in middle school. That's when it needs to be talked about. I don't think it's talked about enough there. You know, and if you can start there, then maybe we can, you know, stop some of these problems from even beginning.
Okay. We're going to change gears. I'm not going to keep, you know, hitting you over and over on the same question. I've got these I want to throw out there. And do you believe, do you understand addiction as a disease?
That'll I do. Help
me. Okay.
I see it. I see it.
What do you think of the statement, addiction is a disease kicked off by a choice?
Yeah, I can say, you know, it's fair to say, I'd say, you know, everything starts with a choice, you know, and you can look, it doesn't even have to be, when we talk about addiction, we can broaden that scope way beyond drug addiction and alcoholism, right? Food addiction, sex addiction. I mean, there's so many different things. Phone addiction. I mean, literally everybody's, and here's the thing. That's the thing. There's a stigma that surrounds drug addiction, alcoholism. Everyone's addicted to something. Everyone has a vice. Everyone has something. Anything you can't fast from for, you know, 3 days, 4 days, you're addicted to it. Like, you know, it is what it is. It's just that stigma that surrounds it. But, you know, it starts with a choice, right? Like, you know, even if I'm not even talking about drug addiction, it starts with what I eat. You know, the things that I eat. Well, if I decide to start eating Big Macs every day, and I do that continuously for all my meals for, you know, the next X amount of months and years, then I'm going to have health issues. I'm going to get these different illnesses and diseases and disorders and stuff. So it starts with a choice. However, you know, when we do talk about drug addiction, alcoholism and stuff, it's a choice until it's not, right? And that's where the turning point is I may have, you know, made the conscious decision to pick up a drink or a drug to escape and get out of here from an underlying issue that I had that made me do it, you know, and thought I found my solution there until it didn't become a choice. And there was a physical dependency there. And then there was mental stuff involved as well, how the brain works and how I react to it. You know, so, it does start with, you know, the making the conscious decision of doing it until it doesn't become a choice anymore.
Yeah. Okay, how much my addiction belongs to me? How much am I responsible for?
I'm responsible for 100% of my own. Of my own recovery, my own addiction.
Yes, all of that.
I mean, I honestly can't. For me personally, I can't point any fingers, you know, at all. Like, they all have to point this way. For me, for my recovery, I'm the one that has to live in my skin. I have to walk in my shoes. You know, I'm ultimately responsible for, you could be dealt a crappy hand. You could be, you know, in a terrible situation that you were brought into and didn't ask for. Right. But it, you know, you can be hurt. It may not be your fault to be in the situation where I've been hurt or anything, but it is your responsibility to heal. It is your responsibility to move. It is your responsibility to change your situation. So, you know, I feel like, you know, we have to take accountability for what the situation is. If we don't like our situation and we don't like our current situation, no one else is going to change it for us. No one else is going to do it for us. So we need to take the initiative and we need to make a change. And as hard as that may be for some people, and there's probably some people hearing that right now, knowing exactly what I mean, that you're living in a situation right now that you know you shouldn't be in, you don't want to be in, but you don't know anything different, and you're scared. You're scared to make that change. You're scared to step out of it. You're scared to the too many what ifs. What if this, and you're stuck there.
It becomes your comfort zone.
And that's what it is. It's your comfort zone, and you're stuck there. And the longer you stay there, the worse it's going to get. It's not going to get any better. And I think you know that also. And so, like, you know, there comes a time, and if there's going to be a sign, this is your sign now, if that's you, is to take a step in faith, take a bold step forward in faith and change your situation. Take a step forward.
So is recovery choice or disease controlled?
The infamous question. Choice. Yeah. Is it a choice? No, I don't see disease as a, I mean, I don't see addiction as a choice. I see it as a disease. It's not a choice. It's like I said, it can start with the initial, you know, me making a conscious decision of using something or drinking something. But like I said, before, you know, not before long, it's no longer a choice. And it turns into something else. And everybody responds differently to it. It doesn't happen to everybody. You know, some people can moderately do things. Some people can recreationally do things. You know, I know what I can and can't do and the way that I'm designed. And that's just, you know how it is. And you know, thank God that he's freed me from the bond of addiction. So we can overcome it and we can recover also. I'll say that, you know, we can recover. People will say, well, you're always in recovery. And a lot of people like to say that and stuff. And okay, I understand that. But no, I fully believe that we can fully recover.
So then do you believe that recovery is a full recovery, as you're saying here? Do you believe that's a moving target, or that it's stagnant, sitting there, and can be attained and marked?
I think it takes maintenance. It takes maintenance, though, you know, just like any other disease, you know, takes, you know, the regular medications, regular routines, regular things to be able to maintain or keep the disease at bay. You know, I think it's when you can reach a point and, you know, stop and don't any longer have an obsession of a drink or a drug. And you get to that point in your recovery and you feel like you've recovered and you can just say, okay, well, I don't have to do any of this stuff anymore and I'm cured. I don't have to do anything. I mean, that I wouldn't agree with. You know, it takes maintenance, you know, continuous maintenance. You know, and for me, it's all rooted in spirituality. You know, the stronger, the more spiritually fit I am, the more I can combat anything that I may encounter, you know, whether that be in any life's challenges or
we're going to fill ourselves with something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's of the spiritual nature, the godly mm-hmm. nature. We're just rooting out the other ugly or whatever that may be to you. Yeah.
Sure.
So
sure.
At what point in the recovery process must I learn to take responsibility for my behaviors and habits? I can't say it's the disease any longer, that I've got to own it and choose if I'm going to move out of it or just keep falling.
I mean, I think that's very early on. If in my opinion, if you're going to be successful at recovering and recovering from this thing, that's one of the starting points, is accepting it for what it is, because you have to be able to take the action to treat it and overcome it. So yeah, I mean, it's like step one for me, you know, that's immediate. We have to take accountability. We have to, you know, identify what the problem is. You know, if we have a problem, what it is, you know, we can't walk into a hospital, into an ER, and just say like, I hurt and expect to get treated for whatever it is. You know, we have to be a little bit more specific. And once, you know, say a doctor understands where and what it is and what caused it, then they obviously put a treatment plan together. Same thing for us. You know, but for me, it's more trying to figure out the roots and causes of what things are that made you resort to a drink or a drug or anything like that. Like if we can treat those issues, then obviously if I treat the issue of why I even started drinking or using or anything like that, then if I treat that, then with that being treated and, you know, I'm in a better space there, then the likelihood of me using what I use to deal with it is is pretty slim that I'm going to use it again, you know, in most cases. So it's really addressing the roots and causes of things, because everything stems from something. There's a lot of learned behaviors too. I mean, that goes on and on. We can get so far deep into that, you know, into the mental health also, and so many things, you know.
That's why we've titled this Beneath the Wound, because we've got to get to the bottom of the issue. Yes.
100%. We can't put band-aids on bullet wounds, you know, and it's like we have to remove the bullet. We have to get it out, and we have to treat it surgically and repair it and close it and treat it with antibiotics like that. You know, that's how it needs to be treated. And that the name is perfect, because that's really what it is. That's exactly where it is, beneath the surface. And you might not know, you know, what it is, and you might start to figure out what it is and then realize it's a lot more than you thought there was.
Into that.
Programmed and learned behaviors and the way you were brought up. You thought things were normal, but they're really not, you know, like all these things play a role. It's a lot deeper than, you know, a lot of people think.
Okay. Let's say we're basically on that long road home, as your book is titled. We're on that journey. What are 3, 4, maybe even 5 markers that say we're successfully moving toward recovery? So I look at your life and I can pick these things out. No, yeah, this is real.
Okay. So I would say, I'd say first of all, I've established a better way of living for myself. You know, I could be, whether that be gainfully employed, and being a productive member of society and not being a part of the problem, part of the solution now, doing the right things. For me, again, back to spirituality, someone that's spiritually fit, that's grounded, spiritually. And really it's just through actions. It's not about, saying what it is, it's just walking it out and seeing it in someone, you know. And you can usually, it doesn't take long when you have a conversation with somebody that's in recovery, no matter how long they've been in it, to really get an idea of like if they're truly in it or not, or, you know, how, and I don't judge somebody else's recovery or take anybody else's inventory or anything. But it's pretty easy to tell sometimes when people might state that they're somewhere, and you can kind of tell that they're not. So it's what you give off, right? Like it's, you know, attitudes, behaviors, they're very contagious. So, you know, I try to tell people, you know, if you know that and realize that, then the goal should be, if you yourself were a person and you are a person, but if you yourself are contagious, literally, quite literally contagious, your actions and behaviors, then make yourself worth catching. Right. Like, so, you know, someone that actually walks it out, and, it's less talking and just more walking it out and proving to people, because that's what it is anyway. Rebuilding these relationships and things like that in recovery is what it comes down to, because talk is cheap. I guess at a point, talk is cheap. You could talk till your face turns blue, but till they see the changed behavior, they see the changed mindset, they see the changed verbiage, they see the changed things in their lives, being actively walked out, that's where you see it in people, that they've turned around and made things better.
Okay, we've got a question here from one of our listeners. Eric, hit us with that, will you?
Yeah. Sean Harris, with dual diagnosis on the rise, do you find it hard reaching individuals with the message of recovery?
With dual diagnosis on a rise, do you find it hard reaching individuals with the message of recovery?
No. I personally don't. I know that, and just the years of experience I have working in treatment centers, and there's usually, their dual diagnosed treatment centers and things like that. But here's how I see it at the end of the day. If people are going to label it as a brain disorder, for one, well, then there is a mental component to it, right? I mean, you have to agree that there's a mental component if you call addiction a brain disorder. So in that sense itself, then everyone is co-occurring. So people might give percentages. Oh, well, you know, 70% or 80% of people are co-occurring, and you know, and for me, I feel like, honestly, if I have an addiction issue, then there's something else. There's a mental component as well. So I feel like almost everybody that struggles with it or deals with it is dual diagnosed. So for me, that's how I approach anybody, you know, moving forward or would help treat somebody, is to treat it as if it is dual diagnosed, because it really is. It really is. It starts and ends in the mind anyway. So, you know, you have to treat the mind, and obviously there's a lot of stuff that comes with it too, when we start to look at the wreckage of our past and all kinds of things too. And, you know, so if you don't already have any kind of thing, you might start developing something, you know, but, at the very end of the day, it starts and ends in the mind. If you want to call addiction a brain disorder, then that has a mental component. So it's co-occurring for me. It's pretty cut and dry for me, you know?
Okay. Okay. Give us 3, 4, 5 disciplines to help you maintain the integrity of being clean or sober or near your recovery.
Service first, you know, helping others, obviously helping others, prayer, meditation, spirituality, discipline. You know, and I think the best thing is, you know, mind, body, and soul. So, you know, exercising, trying to eat properly, eat better. You know, so I think those are the strongest components, is treat mind, body, and soul, treat yourself, you know, as a whole individual. You know, like I said before, I don't think everything's, you know, just addiction recovery, like, you know, if I'm going to recover and I'm going to try to, you know, thrive in my recovery, then I should treat my whole body, my whole temple, not just, you know, in the mind where it is, or, you know, because not only that, it's especially in early recovery, it's going to speed up the process too, also, of, you know, your brain starting to kind of come back, get back to normal and things like that. And it's going to release different chemicals that your brain kind of needs and stuff. And I can just say that because I know that from personal experience, from one of my stays at a treatment center, where I was, you know, coming off of a 5-year, 130 milligram methadone dose, and I walked off the program and just walked right off and stopped cold turkey, and I went into a program, and it was absolutely brutal. And one of the best things, and I mean, it took months to detox off of that. And one of the things that I found that was the best thing for me was painful as heck, but was to exercise and was to lift weights and stuff and push through it and deal with that pain then, and feeling the pain then. It made the pain a little bit less in the bigger picture, in the greater picture. But yeah, just, you know, discipline, helping other people, prayer, you know, I mean, there's so many, the journaling, writing, you know, whatever you find that helps you, that's a productive outlet. There can be so many things. I think it can be very individualized. But I know for me, that's kind of what it is, you know, service, helping other people, exercising, trying to eat good, you know, being involved, with my pastor or at church, having that communication, that relationship, spirituality. Also comes first, and routine and structure.
If finances are no issue, okay, let's take that out of this. If they were no issue, what is the next step you would like to take as far as aiding, as far as encouraging recovery?
So rephrase that. So if finances weren't an issue,
exactly.
And then to the person seeking treatment, or to,
what would you do for those who are seeking treatment?
Oh, and finances weren't an issue.
Correct.
I mean, obviously I would, you know, go where you can get the best care, you know, but first, if you're coming off of, especially, you know, if it's alcohol, benzodiazepines, things like that, you know, go through a medical detox, that's, you know, medically supervised, because there's some severe, withdrawal symptoms you can go through that can literally be deadly. So, you know, I would definitely do that properly in a safe area. You know, and then get the appropriate treatment, whether it be, you know, inpatient treatment, get yourself away from people, places and things for a little bit, be able to dedicate that time. And a lot of people don't realize while you're in a 28 day, a 30 day program that, you know, while you're there, you really, and I would encourage anybody that is going to go to treatment, if you're hearing this and you're going to treatment or anything, to take advantage of every hour you have there, because you have a life outside of there. So the minute you walk out those doors, your whole life comes back again like that. And there comes all those responsibilities and the kids, it's and the wife and the husband. So like, it, and that, I don't think a lot of people, when they're in the moment, they don't quite realize that this is the only moment that I'm going to have where I have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to be able to devote to literally myself, me, myself, and I, and that's it. And no distraction, and have absolutely no distraction. And a lot of people don't realize that in that moment. And I just know, cause I, you know, working inpatient for quite some time, I would tell people that, and you know, then they start to implement a lot more and do a lot more while they're there, because you're not going to get that time back.
What, beyond the medical, what, even understanding, again, finances are not an issue, what kind of program would you like to initiate that is just kind of your fantasy thought out there somewhere?
So like my ideal treatment center kind of thing, or like,
that'll work.
It would be, for me, it would be, and if it's finances, and it would be incredible. That'd be great if it was accessible, first of all, to anyone and everyone, right? Anyone that needs help, it's open door policy. And again, treat the whole person, you know, not just clinicians that are substance use, but, you know, have the proper, you know, people there for health, obviously mental health as well. And holistic approaches, a lot of different holistic approaches, where it's not all just, you know, very curriculum based, definitely things to keep people moving, you know, motion. There would be a lot. I mean, it would be pretty incredible. It would be a very expensive place to build, I'll tell you that. But you know, it's like when you go back to the, if you've ever seen the TED talk about, you know, connection over addiction, where they did the rat park, you know, and they had the rat drinking from the bottle of that cocaine and one didn't, and they kept going. But when it was left by itself, they kept putting him in, they kept just going to the one that had cocaine in it until it finally would overdose and die. And then they decided, well, why don't we add some things for them to kind of, you know, like the wheel and things for them to do and run around, and add a couple more other ones in there with them for as a community. And when they did that, they stopped going to the one that had cocaine in it, and they would drink the regular water. So, you know, it's community. So a good sense of community. And just like, again, treating the whole individual, you know, treating them as a whole, and meeting them where they're at is the most important thing. Meeting someone where they're at, you have to meet them where they're at in order to try to get them to where you'd like them to go or where they need to go.
I think too often we treat others much like we do officials in a sport. We expect them to be perfect their first time out and improve after that.
Sure.
And we're not there. That's just not who we are.
No.
Listen, you've exhausted everything I had here. And graciously gave us your answers there. That's much appreciated.
Sure,
it's
sure.
It's not a fact of if we agree or disagree, but I hope people who are listening are asking themselves those same questions. What's your answer to them? Mm-hmm. And we just may strike the right note and make a difference we've not been able to make before. Is there anything else you want to add or say here, Recovery Mike, or anything else you need us to know? I want you to plug your book one more time. We haven't done that this segment, so go ahead,
please. Sure. I'll speak from my heart. You know, I don't plan anything before I speak anywhere, typically. But I think somebody needs to hear something, I think. And I think it's just, this too shall pass. You know, I think things are hard for everybody right now, and you know, most people, and it's difficult situations right now that we're in, and you know, it's hard to get by, and you know, let alone if you're dealing with addiction or recovery or a loved one, especially that might be an addiction. You know, it's trying times for a lot of people right now, and I think we need to remind ourselves that you know, this too shall pass. It is nothing is permanent in life. You know, there's nothing permanent, and you know, even though your current situation might not be ideal, your current situation is not your permanent destination. And I just want to remind somebody that you might not be where you want to be right now, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to get where you want to be. You know, and just don't give up. You know, the biggest thing I believe the only way you can fail is by simply not trying. And I try to view life as there's no more losing anymore, right? It's just winning and learning. We either win and get to the goal or get to where we need to get. Or if we don't, then we just learn a lot of lessons on how to do it differently, to try it again and do it. And they say a righteous man falls 7 times and still gets back up. So, you know, keep getting back up. If you got knocked down and you have the ability to get back up, then there's a reason why. So get back up. Get back up and keep going and just keep pushing forward, and reach out. I think a lot of people, you know, they just they don't want to pick up the phone. They don't want to do that. They don't want to do something different, maybe, especially that, you know, do something different. You know, if you've tried the whole if you've tried the treatment models, inpatient, outpatient, then you've gone to meetings, you've done this, you've done that, and you know, nothing seems to work, then, you know, try something different. You know, reach out, try a coach like myself, like try something different that you might need. You might need that different kind of accountability and someone to help, you know, figure out what your calling is, what your purpose is, and kind of put that in line and figure out what the next steps are to get there. Because if you have purpose in your life, if you have purpose in your life and something to chase and something to strive for, I can almost promise you that it'll make recovery much more manageable, having purpose in your life. If you have no vision of the future, if you have no vision for your future, it's inevitable before you resort to the ways of the familiar past. So, you know, having a vision for your future.
Vision will perish.
Yep.
Go back to the scriptures there.
Exactly.
I was just thinking of a picture I saw on Facebook earlier today. It was a cartoon of a sort, and it showed a gentleman at the cemetery. He's looking at this grave marker. It's got a name, but it's also got an epitaph on there that says something like, "He always lived for tomorrow, but he died tonight." And I think that's a reminder. Get it started. You know,
it
starts better than no start.
Exactly.
And you don't have to have the answers today, but take the next right step.
Exactly.
It's been a treat to have you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
And we appreciate the work you do, all that you offer, the programs, your writings, and thank you for this second interview. God bless. Take care. Stay in the battle. And folks, we invite you to do the same.
Yeah. Hey, and if I could, if I can just mention just one more time, so we talk about people taking that first step, just for encouragement, please, guys, join the school community. You'll have community there. If you haven't taken a step, if you're struggling right now, it's a perfect opportunity to at least get into a group of people, like-minded people, to help at least encourage you in some sort of way. So go to school.com/nextlevelacademy and join our group, and that'll help you out. At least, you know, we can help uplift you and get you started there.
The hope is there, and so are we. Take care. God bless. We love you all. Thank you for listening. Amen.
Thank you, guys. Amen.